This is a Defocus Media production.
This is Lunch Date with Rachel and Kate, a Defocus Media production. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kate.
What up, Kate?
Rage face, how are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How about you?
Well, I'm down with the sickness.
Ah!
Yeah, I caught a cold. But, I mean, it's valid, because I literally traveled and did everything possible last week, so, like, it's not surprising, but it still sucks, you know?
Yeah, that does suck. But let's just go chronological order and start telling me all the things you did.
Okay. So, let's start with, like, 2 weeks ago now. Last Wednesday, I got to hang out with our good friend, the Traveling OD.
Mm.
He came and spoke, and he was, like, I've always known, like, Will is, he's a pretty cool dude, but he had some really great tips on negotiations and some really awesome, like, understanding of how business works within optometry. And so if you have a chance, like, check him out. That was really cool. And so then I listened to him, want a pair of sunglasses. Yeah, yeah. And they're male. I tried to convince our friend Peter to wear them, but then Peter's wife shot it down. So, yeah. So I have the sunglasses now, trying to find a good male to wear them. And then I got to just learn a lot from him. And then a gentleman named Ron that works with VSP, and they're just really cool people. So that was really fun. Thursday, I went and got my nails done because I'm classy that way.
Yeah, you are.
And that was fun. And then Friday, Rachel and I went to go see a fantastic musical. It was really good.
That was so wonderful. Changed my life. I've been baking pies ever since.
Yeah, so we went and saw Waitress. And the music is by Sarah Bareilles, but it's based off the movie Waitress, which I've now seen. I watched
it. Oh, was it good?
Yeah, actually. And I don't know which one I like better. They're a little different, and I like them both. So that music was fantastic. And so I bought the tickets. And I got them, like, pretty cheap. And so I thought, and they were, like, pit. And I was like, oh, yeah, there's, like, 10 rows in pit will probably be in the back, obviously, because these are really cheap. No lies. Front row, literally as close to the, like, front middle as you can get, pretty much. And so, yeah, we were literally the front row.
It was amazing.
Yeah, there's nobody between us and the stage, which was kind of nice because I could, like, put my feet out and, like, nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I could literally see every bead of sweat on everybody's faces. Really cool. I don't know if I'll ever have a chance to do that again, but it was awesome. So that was fun.
And it was your first time at the Fox. What did you think?
It was freaking gorgeous. Oh, my gosh. If you come to St. Louis this summer for optometry's meeting, you want to take a cool, like, little peek at it. It is gorgeous. So, yeah. I was almost got the man throaty tones in there. I apologize.
No, it was sexy.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Then Saturday morning, got up bright and early. So we finished that Friday night. Saturday morning, got up bright and early and flew to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. So that was really cool. And so Saturday, it was Cherry Blossom Festival, peak bloom. So we were loving it. So I met up with our good old friend Allison Gendon.
Woo.
And we just, like, enjoyed Petalpalooza. Yeah, that's right.
Is that something that you called it?
No, there's two weekend festivities. And the weekend we were there is Petalpalooza. So, yeah.
Okay.
We went down to the Wharf, and I'd never been to the Wharf before. And it's really cool. Like, it's trendy. It's hipster. It's really fun. I got a lot of free LaCroix or LaCrux, whatever you want to call it. So cool. It was really fun. Got to see a lot of fun, cool bands. Lots of pink. It was really nice. Cool. It was really cool. And the cherry blossoms were gorgeous. And so we just had a blast and a half. And then the next day, and so we went home, went to bed, got up. Well, I got up at 6 a.m. the next day because the Smithsonian Museum of African American History is really hard to get into. It is one so popular that you have to book tickets out approximately 3 to 6 months in advance. So I know, Rachel, you've probably walked by this building a million times.
Yeah.
And it's super cool. It's the one with the like jaggedy edges going up. Beautiful building. And I was there when they were constructing it my first year when I went. So woke up at 6 a.m. to get day of tickets, which was very stressful because like things weren't loading and then they were and then they weren't. And there was five of us and you could only get four tickets at a time. And I wasn't sure. And I didn't know.
Oh.
So never fear. I did it. I was successful. The only bummer was we also had tickets for the National Archive that day. And it was hard to, we couldn't do both and get a ton of timing. So we only got to spend like an hour, but it was seriously the most incredible museum I've ever been to. I want to go back so bad. It was,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I regret not knowing things. Like I did not know a lot about Emmett Till. In his life.
Yeah. Oh, did you go down in the basement?
Yeah. So
wow.
It was really powerful. And then just learning about what people who looked like me did in the past to people who did not deserve that. And it was just really heartbreaking, eye-opening, and it was just a powerful place to be. And so if you ever have a chance, I would go. I wish I had more than an hour there. Like, well, I guess I was there for an hour and a half and I wish I had more time because I feel like I didn't get to give my whole experience justice, but it was really great. And so then we went to the National Archives and I got to see the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Cool.
So cool. So then I bought a shirt with the Declaration of Independence on it because...
Yeah.
Why not?
You're an independent lady.
Yeah. Strong, independent woman. Don't need no man, but I do like having my husband around, you know?
Yeah.
Like I choose to
Absolutely.
Have him there.
Yeah, he doesn't cramp your style.
No. Sometimes, but then I poke him and he goes and he doesn't anymore. And so then that night we went and I got a network with a lot of people, met really cool people. And then... Monday, learned a lot about legislation that optometry is pushing right now, which is great. We have like three major bills, two bills, and then an FTC ruling that we're working through. So with contact lenses. So that was fun. Got to meet with a congressman. And then Tuesday was seriously the best. So Tuesday I went and I got to meet a bunch of congressmen and women. I got to go to, I got to meet Sharice Davids, and we've talked about her on here before, but I literally she is the first Native American woman to be elected into Congress that is openly gay. And she's just such a powerful, strong force of a woman. Gosh. And also she was an MMA fighter. For a long time. And she is like, I look like this like giant, this like huge giant, because she's this tiny petite little woman that's like super physically fit. And I'm just like this giant woman. And like we walked into her office and I've been in enough legislative meetings to know that like typically the congressman or woman does not take their own notes. That's not something that they do. And she was taking her own notes. She wanted to know the bill number. She wanted to know this. And she had aides in the room, but she's like, it's important to me to take my own notes too.
Cool.
Like, nobody does that.
Yeah.
And then she was, like, walked in, and she, like, slightly fell out of her chair, and she's like, oh, my gosh, sorry, I'm so awkward. And I was like, me too. So that was really cool, really fun. I just learned so much from her. And then I went a Capitol Dome tour.
Oh, my gosh, cool.
Yeah. I literally got to see, like, the city from way up high. It was so cool. So that was fun. And then... I flew back. I went to the National Portrait Gallery. Jean Michel saw Barack.
Oh, good.
Blew them kisses.
Good, good.
And then went, came, flew back, came home, went to bed, woke up the next morning, went to clinic. Did not have a good day at clinic that day. I missed a CRVO, and you all are thinking to yourself right now, seriously, how can you miss a CRVO? And I can tell you, when you don't advocate for yourself and your patients, that's what happens. So, yeah, that's a big deal. We'll talk more about that in a bit. So, yeah, then I went to clinic all day, drove to Kansas City that night.
Oh, my gosh.
Because why the heck not? Because I was going to COVD. So I went the next day to COVD, learned a ton. Oh, my gosh. I seriously cannot wait to do vision therapy every day for the rest of my life, even though it's going to take a little bit in my practice that I'm joining. So many cool things. So many cool things. Loved every second of it. Got to hear from incredible people who have literally been groundbreaking on TBIs and like how they do vision therapy and like making a difference in the world. That was so great. There were some lectures that were a little, that weren't exactly my beliefs and not my understanding of how the world works, especially on autism and some of those and some different topics about special populations. But you know, I'm learning and growing. And so sat for a little bit and, got to learn a ton. I learned about just look retinoscopy, which I'd done in a practice.
What is that?
Really cool. So you take a spot scope.
Okay.
So like your retinoscope, but it's just like a spot.
We don't have one of those, do we?
And you'll have a piece. No.
Okay.
I just purchased one.
Oh, so dang. Okay, cool.
I think I'm like the first students. Yeah. Like I literally loved it. Like I did it at the last practice I was at and I loved it then and I knew I wanted to buy one. But it's like a financial investment. It's like $500 for everything. Mm-hmm. So like I financially invested in myself for the future. So, you like have them read these your gray oral reading test cards. And then you kind of check out their focusing system.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's pretty darn cool. And like how the lenses you put in front of it and different things. It's really cool.
Huh.
So, then I presented. There was poster presentations, so students presented there, and there was a good chunk of students and residents. But I did an oral research presentation, and I was the only student, and I was, like, presenting with a gentleman from Singapore and Dr. Paul Harris from SCO, who's a really big deal, and, like, PDIG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they presented, and then me. And I was the last one. And then the guy was literally like, be nice to her. She's a fourth year.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, tell me how it went.
Super good. I had a ton of questions. And they weren't like, so why did you do
this?
Tell
us what you presented on.
Oh, yeah. So I presented on the comorbidity of anxiety in visual-based dyslexia and other visual-based learning disabilities. So in the population that I work with at school and like I've gotten a study on is there is a high comorbidity rate. So like people that are diagnosed or have symptoms of anxiety that are similar between those who with people that have visual dyslexia, ADHD, and visual processing disorders. So they struggle with processing information while they read.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really cool to be able to kind of like show that there's significant correlations there and how to, you know, like that we should be screening for this in our practices. And I had people that weren't like, so why did you do this number and why is this and why is that? But it was more like, how can we implement this into our practice? Which was the main reason I wanted to do all of this was like so people could put this into what they know and what they love. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's what I got to do. Yeah.
Such important work you're doing.
I think it's a scratching the surface. And so I just was really excited that I got to do that. Learned a lot about presenting and speaking and just all of those things as well. And it was just really great. I really, really loved it. And I really appreciated that COBD gave me that opportunity. Like being that only student is just kind of, it's kind of crazy and you feel a lot of pressure, but
yeah.
It was cool. So then I came home and I was sick and I slept and I hung out with some friends. And then I went to clinic and then I was sick and I couldn't go to clinic. And I'm here. How about you? How was this last week? How was your weekend? Tell me about life.
Oh, I've done nothing. Let's see. We got a ton more research analysis back from Dr. Bassey, so I've been sifting through that. Wage gap is real.
Hashtag wage gap is real. I think literally that needs to become our next hashtag.
Yes. Okay. What else did I do? Sorry. It's my spring break. I'm allowed to take spring break whenever. So I was like, okay, let's wait until the second to last week of school and I'll go on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just going to fly to Pennsylvania. I've been working on licensing stuff. It's really cheap to get licensed in Pennsylvania. It seems like I had to send my fingerprints to the FBI, like $25, and then you just pay for all the like background checks.
Are you seriously? Separately. That's so cheap.
I'm dead serious. And then I guess I have to take some courses. So who knows how much that'll cost about like child abuse and opioids and stuff. So I'll do that hopefully soon. God, if you're listening and you're from Pennsylvania and I've actually gotten a really late start on this, don't tell me because I'll just get depressed.
Yeah, just don't do it.
But, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to.
I'm so proud of you. Rachel, you're just kicking butt every day.
I brought up to my preceptor because I had a patient who was not well dilated today. I was like, I just let him dilate in the room. If you see something that I didn't see, it's because he's not well dilated for me. So I'm just telling you ahead of time, learning from experiences.
Yes, a.k.a. mine.
Because it really is unfair that, like, we get much crappier views than the preceptors get. And then we're, like, judged by that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're looking when people aren't fully dilated a lot of the time.
No, because we're trying to make time so that preceptors can come in.
Yeah. But my preceptor was super cool about it. She was very, very nice. So do you want to talk about your self-advocacy ideas or...
Yes.
Or what your experience?
Yeah.
And how this isn't your fault at all?
I don't know. But I do need to self-advocate more. So today, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about what we're having for lunch. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
We're having avocados.
Avocados?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's on the menu today, Kate?
Avocados. Wait, that sounded dumb. I can't
remember. You said it so...
Advocados? What did I call them?
Avocados.
I can't even think of how I made my mouth. I can't even make my mouth into that shape anymore. Avocados. I can't even do it. Oh my God.
Now it's like crossed over to some sort of aphasia.
I know. I can't do it. I can't.
Just
Rachel,
say,
you just get to say it.
Say guacamole made with, I can't say it now. Oh, no, I caught it. It's airborne.
Advocados. It's advocados. That's just what we're calling avocados now.
Avocados. Advocate.
Advocados.
Yeah.
I did it.
You did it.
I did it. Okay. So that was terrible. So I had last Wednesday, I had a patient that was... came in that had vision loss in one of her eyes. And she was just coming in for kind of a glaucoma workup. Well, that was the original reason for the scheduling of the appointment. She was like, yeah, but I just like really can't see out of one of my eyes. And she said it was her right eye. And I was like, okay, yeah, sweet. We'll just kind of look at that. And then her right eye, she saw 20/20. And her left eye says she saw 20/40. And I was like,
huh.
I think it's your left eye that doesn't see well. Oh, I also forgot to mention that we got a puppy. My roommate did. So the person that I'm living with. So if you hear random things, it's the puppy. I apologize. So so my patient came in. She couldn't see out of her right eye, she said, but she really couldn't actually see out of her left eye. So we do everything. I run a visual field like I'm supposed to. Her visual fields are bad. Like, they're just all over the place and not very good. And so I was like, well, I'm going to dilate her. And my preceptor was like, okay. Like, and I was like, well, her vision's decreased and I don't know why. And her cataracts don't match her vision decrease. Like, I need to figure this out. She's like, fine, whatever, do it. So I was like, okay. So I did it. And, I think it was like, I dilated her. And then I was like, hey, I dilated her.
Why wouldn't you have dilated her?
And then, well, because she wasn't in there. She just was in for a glaucoma workup.
Oh, okay.
Like, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't technically like I needed a dilator. But since she had the reduced vision and pinholed it and improve it, I was like, well, we should probably figure this out, you know, since she complained about it. So, she was dilating and she just wasn't dilating very well. And I was like, the preceptor that I worked with just really advocates for time, which is great. And so I was kind of rushing and I didn't get a good view of her right eye. And I just was, well, her left eye, which is where the issues were. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I kept getting terrible glare and I couldn't focus on anything. And I was like, what is this? You know, like, why is this going on? Couldn't figure it out. And so I went in and I told her, I was like, hey, her nerves are, first of all, are like nines. So we should have started her on glaucoma meds like a while ago. Second, and so I was like, and these are the glaucoma meds I want to put her on. And this is why. She was like, okay, sweet. And then I said, I can't figure out why she has this decreased vision. Like, her cataracts don't match. I can't focus on anything. Like, I don't know what's going on. I just can't see anything of why she would have decreased vision. She comes in. She has this, and the preceptor is like, Kate, she has a CRVO.
Mm.
That's not, you know, that's just not like a bummer to the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I realized that I just didn't let my patient dilate long enough. And she got a much better view than I did. And I should have said, like, hey, I need 10 more minutes. And I understand, like, time's an important factor. And I agree, but I need 10 more minutes. Or, like, switched her out or had her wait a little bit longer or something. Like, figured that out a little bit.
Yeah, and it's, like, that's not even really an option for us a lot because we just have to do what we're told.
Yeah, and, like, I should have, and then I started crying after the patient left, and that didn't go over super great, which it happens, and each preceptor is different.
What do you mean?
Well, the preceptor asked me to just, like, stop crying.
Holy cow. And told me I shouldn't
cry in front of patients or techs or staff. And so, yeah, and I get it. Like, I get it that I shouldn't, and I didn't cry in front of the patient, but it just was like, you need to pull yourself together. And I just frustrate cry. And I said, and I told her, and she's like, well, you can't talk to me if you're crying. I said, listen, I'm frustrated. I cry when I'm frustrated. I'm here right now. I need to get through this and then I'll move on and I'll get better. But I need to talk to you right now about this. So said, I didn't advocate for myself or my patient, especially very well. And I said, and I'm still a student and I'm learning and I apologize for that. Like, I should have done better. And I said, I don't know what to, I have said, and I realized that I need to do that better. And I said, and I know time is an important factor and I put that over patient care and I apologize. And so I get it. Like, it threw a wrench into her day.
What'd they say?
They just said, you know, like, it's okay. And you are learning and, you know, this will stick with you for a while. And the thing that I've learned most is, this preceptor didn't say this to me, but others have said this to other people. Because now that I've talked about this and opened up about it, so many people are like, oh my gosh, that happened to me. Or like, I've missed something that big before. Or like, I completely missed something, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they said, you know, like, it's most preceptors that I've heard said, you know, like, if you're crying and you're upset and it bothers you, like, you care, you know? If it didn't bother you and you just were like, whatever, and moved on, like, you probably don't care as much, which makes sense.
You're allowed to have emotions. This makes me really upset that somebody was like, no, stop crying. I can't talk to you if you're crying. What on earth? That just perpetuates, like, toxicity in the workplace. Yeah. You are allowed to feel what you feel. Like, that makes me really, really upset and angry. And these would be the emotions that I would have to stifle if I were talking to this person, I'm sure.
And so I just have learned, you know, and I agree. I was also tired. I was also in an emotional, irregulated state. And I was frustrated. And so, you know.
But, like, there's nothing to say that because tears are coming down your face that the words you're saying aren't valid.
Yeah.
Like, you can be crying and saying things that are important. I cry every time there's, like, a one-on-one conflict. Yes. Or, like, if I have to say something that's even slightly awkward, I want to cry. Oh. And it doesn't make the things that I'm going to say less true.
No.
Doesn't make me wrong just because there are tears coming out of my eyes.
No. And that was something that I've also realized is like,
what that makes me so angry.
In my workplace, like, I'm going to be very open. Like, if I'm frustrated or I'm upset about something, I will cry and I'm going to have to take a little bit of time for myself and pull myself together. And I'm okay with being emotional in front of my staff.
Tina Fey in that book, Bossy Pants, she says something like, yeah, you should feel free to cry at the office like at least twice a year. And, like, I don't agree with a ton of stuff that Tina Fey says, but I do agree with that. Like, I don't think there's a real reason for you to make another person's life harder based on your emotions. Like, I don't think it's really appropriate to yell at someone in the workplace because you're angry at them. But I do think it's okay that if you're feeling something and you need to express yourself and you're crying, I think it's okay. I think that's all right. I don't think you need to go hide your emotions. Like, you know what? There's just gender involved in this too. Like, the feminization of emotions is just ridiculous, and it just leads to more toxic gender feelings.
I get 100% why, you know, this, you know, my preceptor might have felt like I needed to control my emotions. She might have been in situations where she felt like she needed to do that before and was trying to impart wisdom on me. And I appreciate that she did want to be a part of my growth and my journey. And I appreciate that. But I, for me, I know that I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to have to take some tears every once in a while in front of my staff and maybe plausibly in front of my patient, especially if they're going through an intense emotional experience and I'm close with them. Like, that might be something that I have to do, and that's okay. And I'm not going to just like all of a sudden cry and get upset and throw a fit, but I want to be able to say, I feel things deeply as your doctor and as a person, and I am a valid person in that. I've been reading a lot of books on like feeling empathy and feeling and how to love other people well. I just finished one called The Anatomy of Peace that I really, really, really loved. And so I'm trying to look in the situation about how, like, I need to get out of my box of how I want to be perceived and also see that this other person's emotions and learn from them and ask about them and learn from, you know, learn about their emotions so I can build that relationship so we can continue to grow and decrease conflict. So that was something that I want, like, I'm working on with everything. And, but I think the most important thing was, like, that I didn't do was self-advocate for myself. I had a friend recently text me that said, she was like, I just need to stay home from work today. I need a mental health day. And I was like, good, you should take that. And she was like, I'm trying to remember that self-advocacy is not being high maintenance or me just wanting to do only things for myself. She's like, I need to advocate for myself and my needs. And I was like, yes, girl, go. So I really felt that in this situation is like, I need to advocate for myself and what I need. And in turn, I can do that for my patient care gets better. But just as a human, if I don't advocate for myself,
I think that's good. Yeah, I remember in like grade school and high school, my mom telling me like when there would be elections for things, like if you can't vote for yourself, how do you expect anybody else to vote for you? Like, you need to be your own fan. You need to be your own advocate. You need to put yourself forward. And, you know, you're talking to the homecoming queen, so it works.
Oh, my gosh. I am jealous at the wazoo. I always wanted to be one of those, but.
You are in my heart.
I wasn't that cool.
You're the homecoming queen of this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so I thought something that was like really interesting was like the comparison between self-care and self-advocacy, because sometimes we can use those terms interchangeably, but they have a little bit of difference to them. And I want to make sure that we're like aware of that going into this. Is so self-care is like occasionally treating yourself to things like food, activities that feel good, that help you feel cared for. Whereas self-advocacy is intentionally curating a life to incorporate that incorporates practices to make you feel whole and empowered. So self-care is taking moments, whereas self-advocacy is choosing a lifestyle. Which I think was when I first, I was like, oh yeah, self-care, self-advocacy about the same thing. And it's like, no, like, yesterday I was intentionally choosing a lifestyle that cared for myself and my well-being as a whole. Rather than, you know, and like knew that. And then today I was feeling much better. So part of that self-advocacy is I was like, okay, I can go back to work because I'm feeling more together and whole and empowered. So that was really good. So how it sounds, this is off of a kind of like a graphic I found on Pinterest, but I really liked, is it says, I care is like self-care. Self-advocacy, it says, may that caring create change, healing, and well-being. So, like, continually choosing those things. So, like, self-care is, like, a needed break. And then whereas, like, self-advocacy is, like, a well of resources that come from within.
That's really good.
Yeah. And then What Is It is Self-Care is like Compassionate. And Self-Advocacy is like devoted advocacy to your own freedom and well-being. So like you're continual, like self-advocacy is something that is continual, whereas self-care is kind of like memento, you know, like more in the moments. So what it does is self-care offers healing and recovery that we need in a moment or and we need in times that matter in short snippets. Where self-advocacy creates a way of living that feels intentionally aligned, internally aligned, so that we can stay present in what matters.
Mm. This is kind of like, remember back when we did Make Hay While the Sun Shines and you taught me what that meant?
Yeah.
This is like self-advocacy is like all the hay that you already made is as part of your lifestyle. And then on the rainy day, you already have hay and that's self-care.
Yeah.
Did I learn? No.
Yeah, you did. About agriculture and about self-care and self-advocacy. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
So, Rachel, tell me about your self-advocacy. What do you do to be your own self-advocate?
I try to set myself up for success. So when I know that I'm going to be struggling later, I try and get really a lot of help before I need it. I don't always do that, but when I can, it tends to work out. So asking for help before I need it is pretty good. Understanding the things that I tend to need help at is, you know, a self-exploration, but useful and helpful in the everyday. So I also try and just make sure that my self-esteem is kind of on point. Like, do I feel like I deserve to have like an easy or relatively easy experience in my work life? Like, do I deserve that? Yeah, I feel like I do. And I feel like it's not wrong for me to ask for help when I need it and to point out when things are completely unjust. And I feel like our work with our research and with UOA and with this podcast, we're advocating for other people a lot, but it's really advocating for ourselves because we are a part of this community. So any help that we're doing for other people benefits us as well. So I think you and I have put together a lot of like, we put in the time. We've put in a lot of advocacy time.
Yeah.
And there's this expression that self-care is activism, and I totally believe it. So taking a day off when you need it is self-care. And if you've been self-advocating all along, it makes self-care easier. And then you live to fight another day and you can be an activist tomorrow.
Yeah. No, 100%. Because you can't. It's hard to take those days and moments of self-care if you're not advocating for yourself on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of go and I read a lot of books because I want to get better at myself.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm advocating for myself by constantly learning and growing and asking myself to be a good person. But also, like, I think eating well, which is something that, like, when I feel like my best self, I eat well. And so I need to do, you know, like, it's sometimes taking those moments and reminding myself that, yeah, this fast food's going to be convenient, but, like, I need some good food that's going to fill my soul. That's a good way to advocate for myself. Yeah. I think also intentionally setting boundaries. That's something that I'm really working on.
Man, oh, man, oh, man. Yeah, it's I get that.
I don't always do that well, and I didn't for many years. And I'm getting good. I'm getting better at it. I wouldn't say good just yet, but I'm getting better. Mm. And so putting those boundaries in every day is something that I want to keep working on. And I think that's the best way to do self-advocacy, because then I can also say, all right, this is time for self-care because I've put these boundaries here.
Mm-hmm. You know, a good example of this might be, I've heard of this before, and people in situations where they have like a business manager who's pushing more and more patients on them or like double booking them. It could be hard to speak up, but I think it's important to speak up because if you're in a job that's running you ragged, even if you really need that job, is it worth it?
No.
Like, is it worth it to feel depleted and to feel like your needs aren't being met and like you're not being listened to and that you're not being valued? And like Linda said last week, Linda Luciano, only stay in a situation where you don't like the corporate culture if you feel like you honestly can change it. If you honestly feel like you can't change it, then it's time to go.
Yeah. And also, if we're not being taking care of ourselves and self-advocating for ourselves, then we're not going to be taking care of our patients well. So, takeaways. I'm going to work better on boundaries and learning about what self-advocacy means to me. Oh, also the puppy's out now. So that's my action item, my takeaway is self-advocacy is a daily practice. Okay, your turn.
I'm going to practice self-advocating by not talking down about myself to other people.
Yeah.
So this is a constant struggle for me. But you know what? Sometimes you got to toot your own horn, and I hate to do it, but I'm going to try and just like not refer to myself as an idiot. I think that's a baby step. That's a far cry from tooting your own horn.
Yeah.
But it would be an improvement over what I'm currently doing.
Right. Yeah, because you're the queen of all that's wonderful and goodness. And so I think you know.
Thank you so much. Like, I agree with you.
I think just making sure you're calling yourself just at least good is a good thing.
Yeah, I think that would be good. So do we have an interview on this?
We do. We really do. So a good friend of mine, Nadia Afkami, she is a second year student at Western University. You probably follow her on Instagram as I Am Nadia. And she is has immigrated from Iran, and she with her family when she was younger. So she was the first person in her family to go to an American college, get her master's degree, now getting her doctorate. And so she talks a lot about self-advocacy and like, you know, working through kind of when your parents aren't sure about what's, you know, hasn't gone through this process. What are ways to kind of help with that, you know, and like be able to feel confident in yourself as well as knowing that your parents are, you know, that maybe family members that don't understand everything do 100% understand. So, yeah, pretty cool. Listen to Nadia. She's cool. She's the coolest of cool. So listen to her and how wonderful she is.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Kate with Defocus Media and Johnson & Johnson. I'm here today with Nadia. She is an incredible student from Western University. So your family immigrated from Iran.
Correct. When I was 5 years old, one of my idols was our optometrist. So I would go into her office and I would pretend to be like, oh, can I get my next patient? And she was also Persian, so that was like fun to like look up to her. And she would communicate with people who would come in and maybe didn't understand the language, like my parents, you know, they didn't speak English at first. So being able to pursue something that inspired me as a child was really important to me, and having that kind of mentor and that idol to look up to as a child who was an immigrant who worked hard, who made it to where she was, even though she maybe didn't have the easiest start, was an incredible inspiration.
Students are going to be coming with similar experiences as you. They might have parents that have immigrated from other countries. They may have personally immigrated from another country. What is your advice for them when they're entering into optometry school, they're starting to navigate this field?
Now more than ever, we need to be promoting health, eye health especially, you know, and having patients come in to an office where they feel comfortable, and that's important. So students who are applying need to realize that just because you're different doesn't make you different, it makes you better. And you're able to help so many more people with that. Honestly, just go for it. Going for it and believing in yourself and knowing that you can do it. Right now, it's so important to be like helping communities, and I feel like as a minority, you know, sometimes we just don't get seen, and being able to be like, you know, I do see you, and I know that you have a voice, and I know that you have something to give that nobody else has to give. So just taking the first step and encouraging yourself and knowing that you can do it, I think, is one of the most important things.
Awesome. I'm so inspired by you. I'm ready to follow you wherever you have to go. You're just awesome. So thank you so much today.
Thank you so much.
Until next time.